What's in your fridge? What's in your grocery cart? What's on your dinner plate? These are the questions that more of us should probably be asking. This episode of the Evolution Eats podcast deals with what it means to eat a sustainable diet. The recent Eat Lancet report has some pretty damning things to say about Western world or developed world diets and their impact on the planet. We have to think a lot more about how the food that we eat impacts the air that we breathe, the land beneath our feet, the water that we drink, and the communities in which we live. Let's start off with a quote from Professor Walter Willett, MD. This is the introductory quote to that Eat Lancet report I mentioned just a few minutes ago. He says, "Transformation to healthy diets by 2050 will require substantial dietary shifts. Global consumption of fruits, vegetables, nuts, and legumes will have to double, and consumption of foods such as red meat and sugar will have to be reduced by more than 50%. A diet rich in plant-based foods and with fewer animal-sourced foods confers both improved health and environmental benefits." So, right here, right now, we can ask ourselves, what are we eating? Why are we eating it? And how can the information we share today impact everyone out there, everyone listening to this podcast right now? We're trying to give people information that contributes to eating better without sacrificing anything, because that is a strategy that basically everyone can apply. We realize that restriction diets and health guidelines invented by far-off bureaucratic bodies are unlikely to sway hearts and minds, but practical advice that an average person could easily apply without changing an entire lifestyle, that's possibly something people could actually adopt. So we feel that's a pretty good option. And that's why those are some of the strategies we'll talk about. I am sitting right here with my co-host, Emily.
Hello, everyone.
And I think it would be prudent for the two of us to discuss how we go about choosing what we eat and why we make those choices. It's critical to what we do practically every day, whether or not we're on air. And that thought process that we've spent quite a few years constructing can be instructive to others.
So we have a couple things that we like to think about when we eat sustainably. Veganism and vegetarianism are really great. We support those type of lifestyles, but we don't think everybody needs to go vegan or vegetarian to eat in a way that is healthy for both themselves and for the planet. So the Eat Lancet report, like Noah mentioned before, does have some compelling evidence that eating a plant-based diet is healthier for you and the planet. But the Lancet report says just limit red meat to about once a week and focus more on chicken and fish. And another thing that you can do to eat more sustainably is to eat locally and seasonally. We really focus on that by going to farmers markets and choosing restaurants when we go out that source their ingredients locally. Another thing that you can do, it's not exactly eating but related to food, is reduce the amount of food waste that you're producing, because food waste is a really significant problem, especially in the United States. There have been a lot of statistics that show that about a third of the food that we produce is wasted, and there are still so many people that are food insecure. So it's really a huge problem. There are lots of ways you can reduce food waste. Obviously, we need to do that on a systemic level in restaurants and food businesses, but even just simple things like meal planning and composting really can help you on an individual level to do that.
Just as a quick offshoot, one of the points you mentioned I've actually heard that up to half of the food that's produced in the Western world is wasted or never fully utilized. So I think that stat is a bit more damning than even we let on about. But it's somewhere in the realm of a third to a half and possibly more. It seems that year by year we've done very little to address the issue of food waste. And that is something that someone could easily look at and reduce their impact merely by making sure they weren't purchasing extra, making sure they were attempting a little bit more to buy things that were available precisely when they were most ripe or slightly before they were ripe, in the case of produce, for instance. And that would really reduce the amount of discarded material at the end of that person's sort of dietary cycle, or at the end of that week of shopping, let's say. Beyond that, there are plenty of techniques and tools that one can use to really transform how you're eating and what your actual diet is going to look like. Obviously, we've talked about seasonal eating, but I think that really local is one of the most important things you can do, because even if something is perhaps not directly in season, we can use technology, of course, to grow things out of season. So if you live next to a hydroponic farm that's able to produce beautiful heads of lettuce 24/7, 365, then that lettuce is still going to be a great thing for you to eat year round, because it's coming from a place that's very close to you, and therefore you're reducing the carbon footprint of the transport network needed to bring and clean and process that lettuce on its way to your plate. And really, whatever you're going to choose to eat, if you can make that food come from closer to where you live or work, there's a really good chance you can reduce the impact of that food on the planet. That's something that is one of the lossless strategies that we love to talk about, because it doesn't mean changing any of your habits. If you continue to eat exactly what you are eating today, no restrictions, and just focus on where that food is coming from, you will already be helping the planet, and your experience of what you're consuming won't have to change.
I mean, I think in terms of the statistic on food waste, I've heard there's also, like, some people distinguish between food waste and food loss, and loss is more on the farm. So perhaps if you include that, or if you say parts of foods that are not fully utilized, it might be a little more than a third.
Certainly. There's a lot of food production that happens before it ever even reaches the processing center or distribution center that might be near to one's grocery store, right? So there are techniques, and there are technologies, and there are entire pieces of a food's life cycle that occur around the growth of that item, or the initial production of that food item, that the public really is not as aware of as they should be. So before we even proceed, I think it's important to actually get a ground rules definition of sustainability, because we're going to use this term a lot. We already have used this term on this particular podcast, and we need to have a sense of what that means in the context that we're using it in, and then hopefully in the context that others are using it in. It's fairly often defined in similar ways, but I think even Emily and I might have a slightly different definition of it. So mine is basically that sustainable activities, sustainable interventions or technologies, sustainable behaviors on this planet refer to those that could be replicated by everyone safely and securely into the future forever, right? So if a practice is sustainable, if a diet is sustainable, then everyone could live and lead by that example, and the world would not suffer. That's the goal here. And it basically means there is a sort of closed loop system where the world would not be any worse if everyone did a certain activity that we're going to call sustainable. It's not the definition everyone uses, but it's a powerful way to describe how we might use resources, how we might transmit carbon into the atmosphere or take it back out, and it gets the ball rolling.
That's a good definition, Noah. I think the idea of a circular system and a circular economy
is really interesting and is really becoming more popular. I personally actually am taking courses on life cycle assessment and industrial ecology, which is all about how can we make the economy more circular, reuse waste products, and be more sustainable in business practices.
I wonder, though, are you defining what you would call environmental sustainability? Because the UN, for example, has a definition of sustainability that includes environmental, social, and economic pillars. So I'm just curious whether you take that into account in your definition of sustainability.
Great question, Emily. And I think the core of my definition is environmental, because other factors always largely depend on the suitability of the global environment to exist. So it's really critical that the planet and the sort of civil society in which we're having this discussion has the capacity to keep existing as it is. If we don't have that, it's going to be very challenging to talk about societal or economic or other types of sustainable activity, because the air needs to be breathable, the water needs to be drinkable, everyone has to have basic necessities in order to be comfortable enough to have those sorts of discussions. So for me, it's really a basic sort of survival understanding that roots all of this discussion. And I don't think that current environmentalism is really being brave enough and saying that a lot of other discussions we have because our environment is suitable to human habitation on planet Earth. That is often taken for granted.
Thank you, Noah. That's really powerful. I don't think, at least I necessarily had thought of it that way, that people are often concerned with improving human health and the quality of life of human beings. And of course, that's critical to our survival and who we are. But at a certain point, you know, if there's no environment, there are no people. So for me, when I think about sustainability, I go along with the UN's definition of sustainable development and sustainability.
They define it as meeting the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs.
So a major change that affects our lives every single day is the literal diet that we eat. And the Lancet report shows us that the diet should look quite a bit different than what we actually seem to be consuming. So this is what a sustainable diet might actually look like. It would contain a large amount of whole grains, some element of tubers and starchy vegetables like potatoes, a large amount of all vegetables, a large amount of all fruits, even a large amount of dairy foods like milk or milk equivalents, and then a very, very mixed bag of proteins. So a spectrum of beef, lamb, pork, chicken, and other poultry, eggs, fish, legumes, nuts, and all of those in different quantities, but vastly reduced from what the average person in the Western world might be eating right now. So we're talking about much, much smaller amounts of red meat and poultry, for instance, something on the order of perhaps 1/7 or 1/10 of what the average person is eating, along with a healthy dose of unsaturated oils, some saturated oils, and then a very small amount of added sugars. That overall, those 7 or so, 8 factors contribute to a sustainable diet given all of the tools and knowledge we have right now. So that means essentially not changing how or where or why we get our food, but simply changing the amounts and percentages. That would still effectively have a hugely beneficial impact on our environment and even our climate.
So what Noah just described is the recommendations for a healthy diet, for how to change the percentages of different macronutrient intakes, different foods, that just by doing that, we could have a lower impact on the environment and we can improve our health. But if we did all of the things that we had alluded to before, we could eat a more sustainable diet
without even changing the amounts of foods we're eating. Or if you have a plant-based diet and you eat locally and seasonally and you reduce food waste, then your diet is even more sustainable.
That's a great point. It's very, very possible, like we said earlier, to have a lossless dietary change, right? To have some sort of intervention where the actual food you're eating doesn't change, but where it comes from does. And that could be the farm that it's coming from, the company that's controlling how that food comes to your table, the restaurants you're patronizing and giving your money to. All of that contributes to exactly what goes into your body and what affects the environment. So it's very possible to consume a burger, for instance, that comes from one cow on a sustainable biodynamic farm, more on this later, or to consume one burger from a fast food restaurant like McDonald's, which could contain parts of 1,000 factory farmed cows. For not only health, but certainly environmental reasons, the single cow burger in this scenario is a much more desirable piece of, let's call it, food. And a lot of that has to do with the resources that are being used, the humane treatment of animals, and the overall corporate culture, let's say, behind how that food is actually coming from its original source to its consumptive end, right? And that is on your plate, in your body. Nutritionally speaking, I'm sure Emily can speak more to this, but it's also a huge, huge part of how healthy that food is. And there's certainly no question that eating a diet full of sustainable foods is much less likely to make you sick and much more likely to encourage your body to naturally process that food.
Now, this is something that Noah and I disagree slightly on. I think there's a lot more to this, being that I have a background in food chemistry and nutritional biochemistry. I kind of question the idea that natural is always better, you know, artificial preservatives and additives are always worse, and I'm sure we're going to discuss this more later. So yeah, we're definitely going to discuss sustainability versus like natural and whole foods, and you know, or what's the difference there, because you know, plant-based burgers like Impossible Burger and Beyond Meat, those are touted for being sustainable and environmentally friendly, but they're not completely free of genetically modified ingredients in the case of Impossible Burger. So I think there's a danger in equating sustainable with natural. However, as a nutritional biochemist, I would say in general, the foods that are more sustainable, sustainably produced, do tend to be better for health. It's true. But that's just not a hard and fast rule.
Thank you for confirming that. And again, what I really mean by this is not so much that you're immediately going to get gravely ill by eating most of the food in a traditional grocery store. It's just that you're going to see a lot more poorer long-term health outcomes from consuming unsustainable food. And that's because processing usually involves the addition of a lot of other elements to food that could be additives, preservatives, thickeners, stabilizers, the list goes on, but things that are generally not found in the natural environment. And they can be natural chemicals or additives, but they're often not part of a traditional human diet, and that makes them harder for the body to process.
Not necessarily, but more on that later.
And therefore, overall, less healthy, or at least not beneficially healthy to people.
I would agree with that, yes.
So it's important to go back and actually touch on what I mentioned a bit earlier, which is biodynamic farming. And this is a term that is really important when we're talking about the sourcing of our food, because when we're sort of comparing and contrasting food that comes from industrial sources or factory farms, there's a natural opposite that I think we're trying to talk about and that few people actually understand. It could be that natural opposite is the biodynamic farm. And this would be a place where essentially agricultural activity and the natural world are in direct association, are not in conflict. And what that means is animals that are being farmed, plants that are being farmed, people doing the farming, all of those things take place in another beautifully closed loop that will not contribute negatively to Earth's climate. So there's carbon neutrality or carbon negativity involved. There are going to be trees and shrubs and grasses and different biomes, different places where animals and plants can thrive normally and naturally. There's going to be minimal use of artificial pesticides, for instance, although certainly natural pesticides could be used. There will be an increased reliance on different types of animals grazing on the same land or on land that's directly adjacent to other types of pastures in that given area. And animals that are on such a farm might even graze on parts of the plants and fruits that are being raised on such a farm. So there's a real sense of this farm being a self-sustaining system. And anything that comes off that farm is not negatively impacting the environment, at least during the production step of those farming practices.
So if you can't have your own biodynamic farm, or you can't purchase from somewhere that does, another way to get your food that would be sustainable if you want to eat meat is to hunt it. And for vegetarians and vegans, this is obviously controversial, but if you're talking about sustainability, pure sustainability, hunting is a good option, because you're not going to be eating meat that comes from industrial factory farming, because and those are the systems in which the most greenhouse gases are being emitted, and where the methane from the cows is really playing the most significant impact on climate change.
A great point. And basically, talking about biodynamic farming, nature is the first and best example of a biodynamic farm. So a creature that lives most of its life, all of its life hopefully, out in a natural environment or on, let's say, a very large enclosed property. We're talking about thousands or tens of thousands of acres of ranch land, let's say. Animals that live in places like that are already on and inside a biodynamic system such that there is no real negative environmental impact from those animals being there. So hunting them on that land, utilizing what you can of those animals, eating that kind of meat, is very, very sustainable, and it is a very small percentage, unfortunately, of the meat that is consumed in the developed world. So not only does individual health improve through sustainable diets, but overall, the numbers are pretty dire, or pretty hopeful, depending on your perspective. The dietary changes that we're talking about here could have a potentially really, really major health effect on the planet, and that's through diet-related disease mortality. So if we actually are able to change the amount of largely meat and poultry that we're consuming, the potential life savings could be as high as 11 to 12 million people per year. And that assumes, again, that everyone in this large portion of the world changes their diet. So by percentages, that may seem like actually a small number of people, but I'm sure those 10 million would love to be alive.
So we've talked a lot about the developed world. However, I did some research in Peru, and I'm interested in international agricultural development. And there I was really exposed to how this idea of eating a diet that's better for the environment by reducing meat consumption is not always applicable to the developing world, in places where meat is a staple food in the diets of these people. And it's really the only main source of a lot of nutrients and a lot of protein. And so I would say that that's an important caveat to this idea of
eating a plant-based diet.
these recommendations are primarily for the developed world, and I think in the developed world, we have gone too far with industrialized farming, and I definitely agree overall with the idea of eating less red meat. And, you know, the other caveat we mentioned was if you do, like, hunt your own meat, it's the diet is still pretty sustainable.
So, looking at the whole world, how do we fix this? How do we go from the current system we have to a better system that has positive impacts on human health and on the planet? It's not about the abstract concept of saving the world and saving the whales. It's about making the planet that we have habitable for people. That's valuable, and no matter what your stance on protecting rainforests is, people should implicitly want to have breathable air, drinkable water, tillable soil. Those are components of a healthy, productive life for everyone. Now, the reality is, of course, that the rainforest is a valuable component of that. And to make a real impact, we're going to look at every piece of the planet and take every country that eats and produces food, which is, by the way, all of them, into account. The Lancet Report has five main strategies for making these changes happen. So the first is seek international and national commitment to shift toward healthy diets. This doesn't even mention necessarily being sustainable, but focusing on health as sort of a wedge to get toward a more sustainable diet. That's actually a really good way to go about things, because it's not necessarily important that food immediately become more sustainable. We're immediately going to be saving lives and becoming more sustainable automatically by shifting toward healthier production. There's just fewer resources needed. Rather, there are fewer resources needed to actually produce the food that we would need for the healthier diet we discussed earlier with less meat content. So that's valuable. Strategy two, we need to reorient agricultural priorities from producing high quantities of food to producing healthier foods. That dovetails with the first strategy, and again seems to suggest that we should focus not just on producing vast amounts of food, again thinking about food waste and what's lost, but we should be striving to create the food that we need, and not much more than we need. There should be a high focus on getting food from where it's produced to where it's consumed, and not wasting anything in that process.
Something else that that point brings up is that we should focus on the quality of the food and not just the quantity. And actually a good part of my PhD research is on improving the nutritional quality of crops, and, you know, as opposed to just focusing on more yield, more.
The third strategy is to sustainably intensify food production to increase high quality output. So it takes the third bullet point in this list to actually talk about sustainability outright, okay? And what this point means is that we are going to have to change. If we're this deep in the process, we're going to have to change how we consider creating and acquiring and transporting all of the food that we eat as a world, basically, as a planet. Within the next couple of decades, it's going to be increasingly important to make sure that that food is sustainably produced, or the negative outcomes will begin to really have a dramatic and noticeable effect on the quality of life of people around the world. Point number four, we need strong and coordinated governance of land and oceans. We mentioned earlier air, water, land, right? So this point really focuses on the land and the oceans, because that is how we acquire a lot of our food, right? Fish that are extracted from the oceans, and animals and plants that are harvested from the land. That makes up a huge, huge majority of what we are going to be eating as a species. So it's really important that we consider conserving the planet and making sure Earth's natural species continue to exist, because the systems in which they're integrated are already very efficient and in their own ways close sustainable loops right? So even if there's some species turnover, the way the Earth has operated for a long time is more or less, given its long, long, long history, sustainable. The life processes that go into our overall biosphere, that is, every living piece of the planet, those processes have been going on and have been cycling for a very, very long time. Only humans have recently been able to really profoundly disrupt those processes. Strategy 5. At least cut in half food losses and waste, in line with UN Sustainable Development Goals. This really goes back to the original points and reminds us that it's going to be critical to not just produce huge quantities of food, but produce what we need, get what we need to where it's needed, and not have too much of that produced food lost in the process, either after consumption from excess purchasing, and excess processing, excess cooking, and also in the beginning part of the process where we might be producing too much, or there might be wastage from improperly farmed crops, and there might be lack of composting, for instance. So there's a lot of things we can do all throughout the food production life cycle that would dramatically improve how we're going to think about food losses. And that's really, really going to have a huge impact on the environment and then secondarily on human health in that environment.
Yeah, so those are really key strategies. I know we keep mentioning the Eat Lancet report. The Eat Lancet is a commission on food, planet, and health that was formed in 2015, and we believe it is a really powerful tool. It was created by many, the report was written by a series of scientists and public health and medical professionals who are really concerned about the future of health and the planet. And so we do generally agree with the report. The conclusion of the report says that the data are both sufficient and strong enough to warrant immediate action. And so we would like to encourage everyone to look at their diets and figure out how they could make their diets more sustainable, just starting with one simple thing, not completely converting to a vegetarian diet if that's not what is easy for you to do, but maybe going to farmers markets more often and eating local foods so that you can support your local farmers and reduce the environmental impact of industrial factory farms, for example.
Great points. And overall, what we're talking about are individual level actions that can have a really outsized impact. Something we talk about a lot is how the average person can do something that benefits the whole planet. Well, impacting one's own health positively is already a great step, but discussing how to do that on a large scale is something that everyone can do. And then once those discussions take to the internet through the magic of technology, those influences really become strong enough to start affecting the sort of change makers and large companies and large government institutions that end up making the large policy decisions that actually have the largest impacts. So don't think that a single voice doesn't matter. It turns out that a small percentage of people making bold and correct decisions for the health of themselves and the planet can have a really, really huge impact.
I would also like to acknowledge that, in general, there is some, in my view, amount of privilege that one has to have in order to even think about the idea of choosing to eat a sustainable or environmentally friendly diet, choosing to be an ethical or sustainable consumer, because oftentimes those products are more expensive. Also, I am very aware and I understand the debate over ethical and sustainable consumerism. And before I met Noah, I wasn't really convinced that voting with my dollar would make a significant impact. And perhaps it doesn't alone, but I now see that small amounts of consumers coming together can drive change, can drive change in the way that companies see things and can change cultural trends and cultural ideas about things. And so I do think that choosing to purchase products that align with your values is one way that we can make a difference. And since food is just so ubiquitous, everybody has to eat. Everybody eats 3 times a day, ideally. We believe it is one step that if you are able to, of course, on an individual level, similar to walking, biking, taking public transit, purchasing a hybrid or electric car, in terms of transportation, in terms of food, you know, think about these things.
Thanks so much for joining us. You can find a little more information about who we are at evolutioneats.org. We hope you'll continue to listen.